Hi, listeners, and welcome to a new episode of the Learning Podcast. Some learning requires tools, or there simply won't be any learning. To learn how to ride a bike, one must have a bike. To learn how to program a computer, it's necessary to at some point use an actual computer. Learning to play a musical instrument is another example of where you really don't get anywhere without access to the musical instrument that you want to learn. And for moving past basic skills, it helps to have a good tool rather than any tool. Anyone who's tried to learn to skate with bad skates can confirm that. A lack of tools can close the door to some types of learning and to benefits that learning can lead to. And conversely, as we shall see in this episode, getting access to the right tool can open the door to life-changing learning and skills. My guest today is Amina Mohammed, founder and CEO of Cameras for Girls, a Canadian charity that empowers women and girls across Africa by equipping them with cameras and skills in photography, journalism, and business. Amina knows all about the learning power of a camera. Hello, Amina. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much, Anna, for having me as your guest today.
You founded Cameras for Girls in 2018 and have since educated and mentored several cohorts of female students in Uganda and Tanzania and have plans to soon expand to Kenya. To date, around 90 women and girls have taken your training program, and over 100 have taken your online training. Over 75% of these have continued to full-time paid work in journalism, communication, or other photography-related careers. We're going to talk more about Cameras for Girls in a moment, but let me first congratulate you on this achievement.
Thank you. It means a lot to me because it's, you know, when you start something, you don't know where it's going to end up. And for me, it was always about job creation first and then building a program to support that.
In parallel with running Cameras for Girls, you are also a practicing photographer with your own business, Amina Mohammed Photography, where you do all kinds of photography, including documentary, travel, and wildlife photography. You also do photography training, including on ethical photography and informed consent. Can you just briefly tell us what that course is about?
Yeah, I work primarily with other organizations who are in the nonprofit space, or even, you know, your regular person who's traveling to a developing country that may not understand the culture. And the idea behind ethical photography, ethical storytelling, informed consent is that when you're going into a culture, you can even be in your own backyard and, you know, the indigenous people in your own country, you are a visitor into that space. You don't know the ins and outs of the culture. So it's so important to ask for permission to take their image, permission to share their image, tell them how their images are going to be seen, where they're going to be seen, whether you're making an income from them, whether they're going to benefit. And then when it comes to informed consent, you know, most people speak English around the world, but there's many cultures that don't, many peoples that don't. So it's pertinent that you explain in their language through a guide, if necessary, what that consent form means. So many photographers are guilty of going into, you know, to working with people, stuffing a consent form in front of their face and saying, sign here. And then, you know, people are like, what am I signing? I don't understand. So it's about explaining what they're signing, but giving them the permission to say, no, you cannot use my likeness, my image, my photo. Nowhere. And so I'm a big practicer of this, and I like to teach others as well, because it's respect at the end of the day, especially when you're in a country where you're documenting children. You wouldn't want somebody walking up behind you and, you know, photographing your children or your likeness without permission. So that's basically what it is.
Thanks for clarifying that. It's interesting.
Yeah,
I
it
like
is.
it.
It is. And I think it's something people are slowly getting, you know, taking on, but I think education is the big driver behind it. So I'm a big proponent for educating others about that.
In the past, you also had a business that organized tours for travelers wanting to improve their photo skills, Triple F Photo Tours. What were some of the destinations of the tours?
Well, before COVID, we did Uganda primarily. We did Tanzania, you know, safaris and the normal things that you're going to see in Africa. But we did a lot of cultural immersion as well. And then over COVID, I had plans to do Turkey and India and all these amazing, beautiful areas. And then countries kept on closing down. And yet I was also leading, I was, you know, working on cameras for girls at the same time. And I thought I was superwoman and could do two things at once. And I came to realize I couldn't. So I shut that business down. But the big portion of that business was teaching people how to improve their photography while traveling to foreign destinations, and then teaching them the ethical photography and informed consent practice while we're doing this. And it was a lot of fun. But, you know, push came to shove when I had planned a trip to India three times and it kept on getting canceled. And I was like, okay, there's something in the world telling me I should not be doing this. And so now I travel for myself rather than for others. But if there's a listener out there who still wants to go, I'm willing and able to travel and teach.
So these were just glimpses into your vast experiences and career. Would you like to add something?
Well, you know, I believe that something drew me into this creative world. I think it was, and what guides is my guiding force in Cameras for Girls, is that I was looking for a way to tell my story, use my voice, whether it was through the photographic image, the filmmaking, or just, you know, through my like speaking. And I grew up in a, you know, in a culture, in a community where it's not, women are not asked for their opinion. Women are not invited to share how they feel, what they think. And I grew up like that. And so I think for me, it was always, how do I share who I am with the world? And which is what I'm passing on to the students that I'm privileged to teach, is that you have a tool, which is a camera, but you have your voice. It's inside you. And I'm going to help you with leadership, with training, with public speaking, whatever it is, to draw that out. Because you have a gift to the world, and let's bring it out there together. Because women, specifically in Africa, face cultural bias, face familial pressure to be married, you know, face a lot of harassment on the job, off the job, are not given opportunities to work in the male-dominated media spaces. So hence why we do the work we do on Cameras for Girls.
Let's talk a little bit about your personal journey, maybe going back even further. What led you to where you are today and photography and the career you've created?
It's a little bit of a winding story, but I'll try not to be too long-winded. I finished high school and I went into fashion design because my mom was a seamstress, and it was the only art that I was allowed to do. I never thought that I could be a photographer because it was not encouraged. You know, when you grow up in an Indian family or Muslim family, you can either be a doctor, a scientist, or whatever, engineer, whatever. And that was not me. So I found my way through fashion and I fell into film and television, literally fell into film and television by accident. And I started out in catering. And then I moved into the wardrobe department, started putting my skills as a designer to use and sewing. And I made a mistake in my interview saying, I can sew. And I never got off the sewing machine. but my last film was American Psycho, working in the wardrobe department. And then I went back to school and I took a degree in filmmaking, which in the end, I didn't really need because I was already gaining those skills on set. but it taught me more about the production side. So I moved from wardrobe into producing short films and music videos, and then eventually documentaries. And then I jumped from that side of the world into TV and then back to documentary. So I kept on looking for opportunities to expand that producing skill, because I'm a personality and I always need to be in charge. But I picked up my first camera at the age of 10. And I always had that thing with me until it burnt out and until I could afford another one. So I started off my photography career doing weddings, which I hated. Bridezillas, they were horrible and it just wasn't for me. And from there, I started to always seek where I fit in the most. And it's funny, I had a passion for documentary and storytelling way back, but I never saw myself there. And now, you know, come full circle, I'm back in that world. Documentaries, storytelling, teaching others, learning from others. And it's just an incredible world to be able to venture into somebody else's community or world or whatever and document how that culture thrives or lives or those people are, and find those stories and bring them to the world. It's quite amazing. But after leaving the film and television industry, I went into a completely different industry in financial services, because my dad's an accountant. So I had two sides of the brain. And I went all the way to become a mortgage broker. I spent 5-6 years doing that, winning awards, making great money, but I was never happy. It was just, I was missing the artistic side of the business, of you know, being creative. And so 2017, I was at a crux in my life. I was trying to figure out, I'm not happy in mortgages. What do I do? And in the middle of the night, literally, I came up with the idea for Cameras for Girls, because I had been back to Uganda in 2007 for the first time to discover our roots. And when I say discover our roots, our family comes from Uganda. We were refugees to Canada in 1972. After being thrown out with all the other Southeast Asians with 90 days notice. So we came to Canada as refugees, and I wanted to go back and discover my roots and tell a documentary. And it was on that trip that I recognized the plight of women and girls who were not getting educations just because they were girls. And it made me angry, but I couldn't figure out how to match my previous world of, you know, filmmaking and storytelling with paying it forward. Until 2017, when I came up with the idea for Cameras for Girls. And a year later, I was in Uganda doing our first workshop.
Amazing. What is it about photography that attracts you or fascinates you?
I think it's the ability to see something through my eyes and then see it through my viewfinder in a completely different way. And play around and manipulate the image. Now, I'm not a big fan of editing. I'll be the first to tell you, but it's a critical skill that goes along with photography when you're working with digital photography. I learned when it was film. So working in film was, you know, you had 24 exposures on this, in this camera, and you had to be so, you know, clear on what image you wanted to capture because film was expensive. So that taught me how to take my time, be patient, really look around. What do I want to document? I think as a digital film, like a photographer now, I'm lazy because I can take as many images as I want, screw up and try it again, right? So it really does change. But I think more for me, it's it lets me let go of my expectations or let go of my stress, let go of everything, just find that creativity within and draw it out. And now I'm combining my photography with art and marrying the two so I can tap into another creative side of me.
Let's go back to Cameras for Girls. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us why you started the program? Well, you touched on it, but maybe in a little bit more detail.
Yeah.
Why and what you wanted to achieve.
So when I came up with the idea in 2017, I first said, oh, I'm just going to go to Uganda and I'm going to teach girls who've been affected by the, you know, the Lord's Resistance Army, who was at that time had already been run out of Uganda, but the effects of the girls or the boys who had become child soldiers was lingering. And I thought I'd go into that community and help them heal by helping them tell their story through photography. But there was no internet, there was no electricity. And at the end of the day, I was just another foreigner coming in with good intentions, but no end result. There was not going to be job creation. And I knew that when I started this, there had to be something that I was going to do with job creation, because Uganda is one of the smallest African countries with the highest population of youth and the highest percentage of people living in poverty. So I didn't want to be just like one of the other organizations, many organizations out there who go into a marginalized society, teach somebody for 1 to 2 weeks photography, take that camera back, share the stuff on their Instagram. Oh, look at what I'm doing. And yet there's no end result for these people. So I started with the end in mind and then built the program out from there. So it was actually a friend of mine who was a journalist who brought it to my attention that girls in Africa, when I say girls, I refer to girls and women because they refer to themselves as girl child or boy child, even if they're men or women. That's why it's called Cameras for Girls. And so I knew that I had to have a job creation element. And he told me that women or girls go for a job interview. They finish school, they've graduated, they've got skills, theoretical, not necessarily practical, and yet they can't get the job because they don't have a camera and they don't know how to use one, which is primarily a gender-based barrier against employment. And I was like, bingo, that's where we can make inroads, because I already had that experience in my own world, working in film and television, being told that you're a woman, you don't belong here, and then telling men, well, move over because I'm here and I'm not going anywhere, right? But they don't have that same opportunity. So building up that confidence, but also the skills that are lacking, such as photography, storytelling, ethical storytelling specifically, and business skills like building a leader, like LinkedIn profile, right? Learning how to network, learning how to build a business plan, because some of them fall in love with photography and say, forget this journalism thing. I want to go and start my own businesses in photography. Great. But do you have a business plan? Do you know how to market? Do you know how to find clients? Do you know how to get charged what you're worth? So we teach them all of that on the side as well.
These programs, how long are they? How big are the cohorts? Can you tell us a little bit about the format?
So it's a year-long program. And some people will be like, you're invested in for a year and it's all free. So it starts with phase one, which is a 4-day workshop in the country. And this is essential because if I was to sit here in Canada and try to teach girls, even though I'm from Uganda, like on the other side of the world, there's that cultural drift, right? Like that I have to, or that cultural divide that I have to jump over. They have to get used to me. I have to get used to them. So for the first 3 days, we are in the classroom learning how to use their gifted cameras, going from auto to manual in 3 days, teaching them all there is about photography, composition, the essentials, the basics. On the fourth day, we do field practice with another NGO or nonprofit in Uganda that's local based, that works in education, women's empowerment, gender equality, and we document what they do as an organization. But the girls now understand the premise of interviewing a beneficiary, documenting with photography, how to take photos, not standing over somebody, but making eye contact, how to, you know, make somebody feel comfortable behind the camera, how to write their articles using proper grammar and spelling, all of these things. And then I come back to Canada and we start the online training, which means that I have an online training platform. It's all video based so that they can go from beginner to advanced photography skills. Then I've got a lot of guest speakers who come on and teach what they know. And all of this video gets added to the platform continuously so they can be there 24/7. And then I teach Fridays live. Something about photography, storytelling, or business. And then we get into mentoring, which is, I think, where the rubber hits the road, because I can give them all the skills, I can teach them what they know, but they need one-on-one somebody to keep them accountable, somebody to say, okay, you want to be a travel writer. How are we going to get you from A to Z? Let's make a plan. Let's get you there. And that's become really where the success metrics have come out, I think, is the combination of us training them, teaching them, holding them accountable to biweekly photos they have to send in and monthly assignments to make sure that they have a portfolio to present at possible job interviews. But they're also building up their confidence, because that is a huge part of this, that they don't feel good enough in a culture that tells them that you do not belong here. You should be in the kitchen, cooking my dinner, having babies, taking care of the home instead of working, right? So we've all come through that long time ago in North America, and yet they're just starting that journey there.
The cameras are obviously a central part of this program.
It is.
Access to cameras. Where does the cameras come from, or who supplies them, or
we
how
do.
Does that work?
We do. So what we do is we fundraise in various ways. We have obviously the regular way to fundraise, people becoming one-time or monthly donors or corporate donors if we can find them, or sponsorships. But we also raise money to, or we also raise, ask community members or sponsors to send us their used camera equipment, right? A lot of people have cameras that are sitting there languishing, not being used, because everybody now has an iPhone. And so they're like, what do I do with this camera? So instead of ending up in the landfill, they could send us their camera equipment. We give a donation tax receipt for the in-kind value. And then we use that pot of money to buy the cameras that we do for the girls. We use the Canon G1X camera because it's great for photography, videography, but it's also small enough that they can keep in a purse for safety, but just perfect for them to start learning on before they jump to a DSLR, because it's a bigger investment. But yeah, it is one thing that when I was putting this program, when I looked at, you know, that gender-based barrier of, well, I can't get a job because I don't own a camera and I don't know how to use one, was, you know, the thing that I said, okay, had to be part of this program. And so there is the argument that some of the girls will look at this, well, like, everything's for free, I don't have to work hard for it. And they do, because I keep them accountable, or their mentors keep them accountable. And if they're not doing the work and they're just there for the camera, they quickly are exited from the program and the camera comes back to us, because I have to be accountable to our donors, right? And to our board, and to the people who support us. But I will say that that 75% success metrics comes out of having a, like, a tool belt. It's not just the camera, but it's all the skills that come with that camera that are going to make the difference. And if I may share a story about why that camera, became the guiding light for us, is during my first workshop in 2019 or 2018, I had a young woman, Jonita Nakata, who was part of our first cohort, and she had a job. She had a job in as a journalist, but she was not getting paid and she was not getting published because she had no camera and she didn't know how to take photos. And 2 weeks after finishing the training with us, she wrote to me to say, I had a job, I didn't tell you, but now I'm getting paid and published, and I signed my contract, and I will be paid and published 4 times a week. And a year later, when the roof flew off her mom's house, she was the one to be able to fix it because she was making an income. And a year later after that, she earned enough money to buy her own DSLR. So it's all about empowering them to also reach for their own goals, right? Cameras for Girls can be the beginning journey, but it's not like Cameras for Girls is going to pay for everything for the rest of your life. You also have to be able to work. So I liken it to, you know, that saying, give a man a fish and he'll eat for a day. Teach a man how to fish, he'll eat forever. So same thing with this program.
So having a camera is something that most people in the industrial world take for granted, right?
They do.
Certainly do.
Yes.
What does a camera mean for Cameras for Girls student?
It means empowerment. And most people are like, yeah, what does that mean? It means that she now can hold something in her hand that's going to open up so many doors to her, not just for self-employment, because now she can go and take pictures of people's events or weddings or baby showers just to make some income while she's learning. But it also opens the doors for so many of my students say, oh, at university, they saw I have a camera and I know how to use it. And they've asked me to take photos at this, you know, master event. Or one of the girls wrote to me and said, I was invited to take pictures of the president at the inauguration day or celebrations day, Independence Day, sorry. And that just small thing, you know, opens up their eyes to opportunities, but also open up their confidence to say, somebody believed in me and showed me that through this tool of a camera, I could do anything I wanted to do. So one of my girls last year, she's graduated from the program now. She came in June 2023. And in November, she wrote to me and said, I wrote my first book and I've gone and found a publisher, taken all the photos, I've written the story. She wanted to tell the story about her culture, which was the smallest of 54 tribes in Uganda, about the practice of what is it called? I want to say GBV. It's female, sorry, FGM, female genital mutilation. So she wanted to tell the story of female genital mutilation within her culture that's still a practice, even though, you know, by world standards, it's been banned. And so she'd written the book, found the publisher, arranged for the publishing, like party, the whole thing, but she was lacking a few $100. So she said, would Cameras for Girls support us? And I said, absolutely. You've done all the hard work. We'll do the rest. And so it's that, you know, she could now take that camera, take those photos, pair it with her beautiful writing, and have something tangible to show at the end of the day that says, I did this. And the door was opened, I walked through, and I did this. So we meet them where they want to be, not necessarily where we think they should be. So while we say that you are in a we're giving you the skills to enter this male-dominated media industry, it may not be where you end up, but as long as you end up where you want to be, that's success.
Do most of the girls that enter the program have like no camera experience?
Most of them, I'd say, out of the 64 girls in Uganda, we had maybe there was 4 to 5 who came in with previous experience, but they didn't know how to move from, you know, auto setting to manual setting. They didn't know the exposure triangle. They couldn't figure out, how do I manipulate all these buttons on this camera? How do I make it work for me? One of our girls, who's now a working photographer in Uganda, photographing two photography clubs, or soccer clubs rather, football clubs. And she's also working for different NGOs documenting their work. So she's full-time working. She came into the program in 2022, and she didn't know how to operate the buttons. And 6 months later, she was already working for one football club. But it's also teaching them, fine, you got the job, but what are they paying you? Because when we sat down to look at what they were paying her, I said, you're paying them to do the job. They're not paying you, because by the time you finish traveling to the job, doing the job for 4 hours, editing for 4 hours, and then turning around and coming all this, you're not making any money. So teaching them how to value themselves is crucial as well.
Can you tell us about someone else in the program?
Yeah, I actually spoke with Annette today, a young woman, and she got a job last year after finishing Cameras for Girls. She got a job as a journalist, which she, you know, that was her dream. And she quit within 3 months because she was getting sexually harassed by her boss, like on a daily basis, that was causing mental health stress. And she, you know, and we teach them to say no to systemic harassment. We advocate against sexual harassment, and it's a rampant issue. So she disappeared. She wouldn't, like, I couldn't reach her. I was like, you got this job. What's going on? Are you so busy? And then finally she came and she said, I'm embarrassed to tell you, but I quit my job. And I said, why? What happened? And she told me what happened. And I said, I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you for standing on your own 2 feet. She said, yeah, but now I don't have a job and I can't pay rent. I said, okay, I will pay for your rent until we find you a job. So I set her up with another mentor, and she now has a job. She's not working in journalism, even though she wants to go back to it one day, but she's in that fear stage. What if it happens to me again? So we're working with her on that. But right now she's working for a private school, working with teachers who are very low paid in Uganda to help them upskill on their end. And she's using her photography and storytelling skills to document the work that they're doing. So she might not be in media related, but she's still using her media related skills. And so then there's patience. Patience is incredible. She came through our program in 2019, and she stands maybe like 4 feet tall, but she's very outspoken, very well written. She had a blog at the time, and she's like, I'm only here because it'll help me tell my travel story. She wanted to be a travel writer. So COVID came, of course, and then I had to stop the training after 2019. That was our last one. Then I went finally back in 2022, and we met up the night before the next training, and I said, what's going on with your job? And she says, well, I've been going into work every day since COVID started, and I have not been getting paid. I said, what do you mean you've been going in and not getting paid? Have the men been getting paid? And she said, yeah. I said, what does that tell you? There's no, like, you're not getting valued. So I said to her, tomorrow, and she was the impetus for our mentorship program. I said, tomorrow you're going to go back on your computer. You're going to finish that LinkedIn profile that I told you to finish a year ago. I'm going to find you a mentor. And a year later, Patience won Travel Writer of the Year in Uganda. And now she has her own writing consultant company, her blog, and she gets paid to travel and write for other brands across East Africa. So, Yeah, they take it and they use it to where they want to get to. Because that's, they see that, okay, this is going to open the door to my goals and my dreams. Cameras for Girls is a stepping stone, and then I can go from there.
And you try then to stay in touch with the participants after the program.
Absolutely. And yeah, we have different WhatsApp groups for each group. And so I will see opportunities like photo contests, or you know, there's mentorship opportunities, or maybe it's a advanced journalism program in another country, or scholarship to this or that. So I'm constantly sharing opportunities with the girls. So whether it's, you know, one of the girls is working on a Rotary Peace Fellowship. And so I've hooked her up with somebody here in Ontario who helps girls do that. And so now we're going to be forming a committee to help her get into the Rotary Peace Fellowship. Another one is applying for the Obama scholarship. And so where they, even if they've come through the program, they're always a Cameras for Girls cohort or fellow, and they're always welcome to come back and keep learning.
Confidence with technology, like a camera is something that, it's something that you will have to build, I guess.
Absolutely. I think it's like any technology, though, not just camera. But yeah, it's you get this thing and you think, oh my God, I can't operate this thing. I have so many people say to me, yeah, I never got off the auto setting because I'm just too afraid to go there. I'm like, what are you afraid of? Well, I don't know what the buttons do. I'm like, so has anybody showed you? Right? So I think it's when somebody shows you, and I drill the exposure triangle into them. And I drill working in manual. And some of the girls will go back to auto. And I'm like, not allowed. You're not allowed because you know this. And it's just you stepping out of your comfort zone and stepping into your confidence zone. And once you know this, it becomes like riding a bike. You know, once you've ridden a bike, you always know how. Even if you're going to fall off, maybe after so many times, you're going to get back on and you're going to ride it again. So it is a confidence thing. It absolutely is. And I remember how I used to be when I got into digital photography, and I was like, oh God, this is so different from working in, you know, in a film camera. But you just have to keep on going at it and trying and trying and trying. And some of them have this thing that, oh, I have to be perfect. The first time I do it, I said, oh my God, I've been doing this for like 25 years and I'm still not perfect, right? I'm still learning. And that's the fun of it, I think, too.
Yeah. And then also building skills in technology will kind of fuel confidence in other areas, I
Yeah,
believe.
I'm teaching them ChatGPT right now because it's like my favorite new tool. And we did a session on ChatGPT and they're like, oh my God, we didn't even know about this, right? So it's what you don't know is what you don't know until somebody shows you. And so it's just, it's fun for them to play with and learn from and see what it can do for them. And so, you know, we give them different assignments all the time, like go and learn about texture. And texture is everywhere you look, right? Everywhere you look, but it's opening up your eyes to see it. Go and play with light and shadow. Go and do like, so teaching them how to just explore through the lens of a camera as to what is possible is very different than walking around, because half the time we walk around and we don't even see what's in our surroundings.
Cameras have been at the center here, but what in your view, what other technology tools are not available or in short supply in these communities in Africa, say?
Well, even a smartphone, some of the girls don't have smartphones, right? They just have regular phones. So it challenges them to get onto our Zoom sessions because they may not have a smartphone and they may have, you know, lost or gotten stolen their computers, or they have to travel to our computer lab to use the computer. So where we all have smartphones and we have computers and we have all of this, lack of technology, I would say, is the biggest crux of the issue than knowing how to use it. Yeah. But we can't, I mean, we have limited funds and we have looked at how can we equip each of our girls with a computer as well as a camera, but it becomes very cost prohibitive when we look at what the output is. So that's why we build a computer lab in each of our, where our program areas are run by volunteers so that the girls can learn editing, like Photoshop, Lightroom, but then they can learn digital marketing skills to, and then if they don't have a computer, they can go there and do their assignments and then send it in, because it involves writing and editing and, you know, grammar, teach them Grammarly as well, because spelling and grammar might not be their best friend. Even though they're all taught in English, it's not necessarily something that is highlighted, right? And even if they're in university, it's not necessarily something that is warrant, like they worry about. But how are they going to go and be on a job without proper writing and grammar skills?
What are your plans for Cameras for Girls going forward?
Ooh, that's a loaded question. Well, we have plans to expand to Kenya in 2025, Ghana 2026, Nigeria, South Africa. Somebody today asked me about Rwanda, and I said I would love to do Rwanda and Ethiopia, but the way our primary program works is by partnering with universities, journalism universities in the countries. And so if there's no journalism program to partner with, because that's how we recruit our students, then we can't go there. But having this online training platform allows me to open it up to anybody, anywhere, which is the beauty of this, right? So as long as you have your own tool, come in and learn. It's a great way to build community and capacity as well for women who may not have opportunities in their communities or, you know, in their countries.
I wish you the best of luck with Cameras for Girls. And
thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Amina. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Before we go, though, I'd like to ask, because I usually end these podcasts asking the guest if the guest has a question that we could potentially bring up in a future podcast episode. Something you're curious
about. That's an awesome
about.
Idea.
Yeah.
I am. Do you know, I'm interested to know how, you know, the use of technology, whether it's a camera, whether it's computers, whether whatever it is, it's the tool, can bridge that gap between, you know, incorporating gender equality and technology, right? How we can intersect the two. Because our work primarily lies in gender equality, the United Nations SDG number 5. And I think when people look at technology, they're always looking at it at a high level, like only people here can access it. But if everybody cannot access technology and make it work for, you know, moving those boundaries against the have and the have nots, or if we look at men and women access, I think that we're doing a great disservice to the world. So I think that would be my question. How can we use technology or cameras specifically in my case to bridge that intersection between technology and gender equality?
Thank you. That's a very good question. Let's see if I can find someone to discuss more around that topic.
Yeah.
In a future episode. Thanks again, Amina. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for your time. I really appreciated this, and this was a lot of fun.